I'm Brian Shelton, and you're listening to Harper Talks, a co-production of Harper College Alumni Relations and Harper Radio. Today on Harper Talks, I'm excited to speak with Maham Khan, a 2003 Harper College graduate and a current Harper professor. After Harper College, Maham attended Northwestern and DePaul, where she earned her master's in journalism. She joined me in the Building D Media Lab studios on the Harper campus. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Normally, we do this on the radio, but we made you get up and do your hair and makeup and
I
everything.
Know.
So, because we're doing
2 hours
video
of my
today
life,
too.
I'll never get back.
Yeah, oh, come on now. I did want to get this out of the way really quick. If you're listening or watching this and you don't know us, I'm assuming, but on this podcast, but Maham and I share an office wall. So it's just kind of weird slash fun to sit down with you in this environment and have this conversation. But we get to help these students with their final project, so that's fun. So it's a good time.
Exciting.
So, yeah. Hey, what brought you to Harper College? I know that you grew up in the area.
Yeah.
You're not originally from the area, but grew up in the area. What brought you here?
I did grow up in Palatine. And I didn't really like know in high school.
Yeah.
I was just kind of checking off boxes, and I wasn't super motivated, I'll put it that way. And my parents were like really overprotective, and they're like, you know, you don't know what you want to do. You want us to spend a lot of money on college. And they kind of were like, you know what? I think you need to stay home for two years and figure it out. And it was probably the best decision. I would say it's probably the only decision they have ever made for me that was awesome.
Yeah.
But it was a good one. It was a good one because I'm like so grateful that they helped me realize I wasn't really ready to go away yet.
Yeah, that is such a common theme. So I think you're like number 49 of podcast here on the show. And every time, without fail, when we talk to someone, it's I didn't know what I wanted to do, or my parents didn't think that maybe I was ready to do what I should do. And so I came here, and it wound up being the best decision that I could have made.
Yes.
And it's a very common thing. And I think that it's good for our students to see that and hear that and reflect on that, because I think some of them, when you were coming here first, were you like, well, I don't know that that's really what I want?
There was some shame.
Yeah. That's
because I did want to, you know, I did get good grades and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I came from a family of my, like, generation of cousins and stuff like that. Our parents didn't go to college here, but my cousins and stuff did. And they were all high achievers, right? And so going to Harper, there was some shame. And I'm a truth teller, so I'm going to say it. But my parents kind of sent me here as punishment because I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And they were like, well, if you have no decisiveness, you're going there. And my dad said to me, you know, I'll let you move out of the house and I'll, you know, support you if you get into Northwestern. That was the deal.
Yeah.
So I said yes, even though Northwestern did not take transfer students at the time, but he didn't know that. And it's interesting that the year I was graduating, they opened it up to transfer students, which was like some cool synchronicity there. But so it was like punishment. There was shame because it was like community college. And I think we at Harper are like doing a really great job about defying that notion.
Yeah.
And it's like deeply rooted ancestrally in our education system, even though I was richer than all of my friends coming out of college because I didn't have debt.
Yeah.
And I was making a quarter of what they were making because debt bogs us down. And so it was such
the stigma around community colleges. I mean, it is such a deeply rooted thing.
Yes.
It's so interesting to me. And that's a common thing talking to people on the podcast about this, that they experience that, every single one of them. And they're like, I don't understand why, looking back at it now, why there is a stigma around it, but there is. And and it doesn't matter like Harper is a top 20 community college in the country, but yet still it's, oh, I'm going to Harper, you know, and that's such
it's
a weird.
Particularly an American thing. Like
in
a lot of Europe and other places, they have this kind of idea of like college and then university.
Right.
And so we just follow that suit. But here it's a little bit more, I think, just competitive. There's like a little more classism of like where you're going to go.
Where you're going
to go. So there was some shame. There was like bow your head going out of the house the first day. You know, I was like, I'm on my way to Harper, as if it was like juvie. It was so funny. But it was, like I said, it turned out to be the most beautiful experience.
Yeah. Well, so now your first semester on the Harper College campus was when 9/11 happened,
God.
For younger listeners, 9/11 doesn't mean anything to them. But for us who lived through it and experienced it, what was that like as a college student and for you in particular for that time?
I mean, you're a month in as a freshman, you're trying to navigate. For me, it was also like really difficult to get to my classes on time. I struggle with that because I used to have to catch a bus in high school. And then here I got here and it was like, okay, I got to get to my 9:30 class. That self-management, self-regulation, hence when my parents were like, you need to stay home. So I was like, I have to get to this class. And
she
I always was like 9:35 pushing it, right? So I show my late students a lot of grace. But it was hard. And I remember that day, it's so funny, my speech teacher, Marsha LaTrenta, lover, she gave me an ultimatum.
Yeah.
She was like, if you're late one more day to class, I'm dropping you a letter grade.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think I could say that to a student today. Yeah. I don't think we could, but she did say that to me. And I remember driving, and the thing I was panicked about was like, oh my God, am I going to get there at 9:35? And so I'm huffing and puffing, running up three flights of stairs. And I was late, but nobody noticed. Because they were all huddled in the corner. We had televisions, you know, in the room. And of course, there was this like terrifying thing unfolding in the corner. And I have the worst memory, but I will never forget like every minute of that day. I remember what I ate for breakfast. I remember what I wore. I remember things that were said and the fear. Like the fear was so real. And that fear stayed on campus for a really long time.
Yeah.
For a really long time.
Yeah.
It was horrible. People were like trying to get out of the parking lot was a chaos, you know, and it was people are really good at losing their mind. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast? I don't know.
No.
Okay. Right. No good alumni would do that. But everybody was losing their mind.
Well, I remember teaching that week and, you know, everybody was obviously shook by what happened. You know, it's like, well, okay, well, we're doing audio production and video production. Let's talk about all the coverage that we've seen and what that sounds like and what that looks like and how you cover a disaster. And so it was interesting from that perspective as well to look at that. But yeah, I think people were terrified. They didn't know what was coming next, right?
Yeah, my dad was in the city of Chicago and Chicago was like the next place. For me, there's a layer to it too, because like I was raised Muslim. I didn't have a very strong identity and I didn't really identify, but just, and again, truth telling, like I decided to there was like no Muslim Student Association. It was like completely in hibernation. And I knew I wanted to get to Northwestern. So I'm like, okay, time to chalk up the leadership and all that. And I literally went and filled out some paperwork and I'm like, I'm going to make myself president. Yeah. There was no objection. There was no one to vote. I just did. And I want you to think about the irony of that. Like, that happens, and all of a sudden 9/11 happens, and the spotlight is on this faith group and, like, this identity. And people are coming to me like, you're the president. What are you guys going to do? What are you going to talk about? And so it was really insane because all of a sudden I was also having to grapple with, like, what does this mean for my people, so to speak, my people, and why were all these like terrorists? Why were they Muslim, right? And it really blew open a whole identity crisis for me in a lot of ways about this, I had to delve into self exploration, understanding my religious identity in a way I never ever cared to understand it. It's true.
But how was that for you though? I mean, like, did that affect your college performance, or did it affect who you were as a person?
It was a scary time. People were, I don't think you can look at me right away and say, oh, she's Muslim. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't for me, but there were a lot of young women who were wearing hijab and there were people who identified. And I had to step in as a leader in a way. So I had put it down thinking I wouldn't have to do anything. And then all of a sudden I had to like step up as a leader. And what surprised me about myself is that I like took it on and I embraced it and I had to have answers. So believe it or not, there were faculty, there were, you know, DEI work has come a long way.
Right.
But at the time it was like, yeah, we're going to put you're at the mic and you're going to answer all our questions by Islam. And that's literally what I was doing. And so I had to go and uncover truths and verses and things like that. And so it was, now that I look back at it, I'm like, man, no one should have put me in that position.
Sure.
No, I shouldn't have to have been answerable for an entire faith group. But it was like this idea of understanding. And then a lot of horrible things were happening on campus. Like, there was a lot of anger, right?
Yeah.
Towards us. So there were women who were having their hijab pulled off. There was a lot of harassment. And then, like, a lot of the Muslim students wanted to, like, protest that. So they wanted to hold these prayer demonstrations. And the Christian groups were like, no, you can't do that. So it was a lot of tension.
Yeah,
it was
a lot of tension. Yeah.
So it was like a dramatic opening year to college.
Yeah, for sure.
But it formulated in me this, like, step up and have a purpose kind of energy, right? And it wasn't about the religion even then. It just became about, like, understanding what people need in that time and, like, communication and curiosity and learning and problem solving, conflict resolution between groups. And the little TEDx talk that I did do for Harper's 50th anniversary was all about that experience of two interfaith groups coming together to, like, resolve all this tension on campus. And it's probably one of the most proud moments of my life.
Yeah. Such an interesting time to be.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, so you were also, not only were you the president of that organization, but you were also heavily involved with the speech and debate team while you were here as a student. I think you're like the fourth alumni we've had from the speech and debate team. It's like an embarrassment of riches with that group. But tell me how you got involved with that and what that was like.
So I did speech team in high school, and I wasn't very good even in high school. My like I kind of peaked my senior year and run the regional champ, and it took a lot of work. Public speaking didn't come naturally to me. I had a stutter. There were a lot of things I had to overcome, but there was something about it that like pull again. I think I had, without realizing, I think I had a growth mindset, which was like a big blessing, you know, like, all right, I'm just going to seize this opportunity. And so I wanted, we didn't have social media and we didn't have all these things. And I wanted to make friends. I felt like this was a fresh start. And with, like, the teetering of 9/11 and all that, I just, like, wanted to have some fun.
Yeah.
You know? So I got on the speech team, and I sucked all season. I was horrible. I was the underdog. I never won anything. People were like, what's her name again? Like, it was. I was such a forgotten person. And we had such a talented team that year. Probably by far the most talented team we ever had. And so it was hard to be in that shadow. But then I just kept at it, and I kept at it, and by the end of the season, I won a gold medal. I was the underdog, and a lot of the talented people didn't win anything that year, and me, the person
you won a gold medal,
I won a gold medal, and it, like, blew my mind, and it was awesome. It was such a – I'll never forget that feeling, like – I was in tears. I was just – I couldn't believe I had done this, and I was just learning so much about myself as a person.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of self-esteem issues in high school, right? So all of a sudden I was like really stepping into my power, and that was amazing. And then I became the captain next year, you know, the year after that. And yeah, it was great.
Yeah, the team requires a lot of effort. I mean, it's a lot of practice. It's a lot of travel. It's, it's a big commitment. How did that help you prepare, you think, for maybe transferring from Harper to someplace like Northwestern? Like, you had to learn how to really manage your time and not be late.
Yeah. And in fact, they were – being on the speech team gave me the in with at Northwestern.
Okay.
So they had – we had tournaments that we would run into Northwestern and things like that. And, you know, my coach, who was amazing, said, like, introduced me to their coach and said, Mom's really interested in going to Northwestern. And – you know, we know Northwestern doesn't really do transfers, and I don't remember how, and I could be wrong about this, but at the time there was like no talk of transferring from a community college. And so I don't know if they sort of opened that door or what. But I remember they were like, well, let me talk to some people. And that was it. I was recruited to come compete for their team. And that was kind of a condition of entry.
And so you competed at Northwestern as well.
Okay. I did.
What was that? How was that different? I guess.
It was different because I wanted to party more when I was at Northwestern, and my parents weren't around. So
yeah.
The work ethic dwindled a little bit.
Got
because
it.
I had my – but it was – I met the most amazing people. And again, it did give me – when you come in as a transfer, you're coming in as a junior, and that can be really alienating.
Right.
And I was seeing other transfer students were struggling to make friends and things like that. But I had an amazing group of friends. And – my debate partner, my duet partner was Gabe Gutierrez, who is like NBC5 anchorman in the Oval Office nowadays. And, you know, he was an incredibly talented person. So I learned a lot from him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like by senior year, I was kind of like, I need to slow down and I needed to focus on my academics, because like I said, that year back was a lot of partying.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, if you didn't go to college and party, what would
But I was working hard here so I could get to where I needed to be. And then I enjoyed that independence. But very quickly, about being at a competitive school, is they will let you know, right? Like, you need to get back on track. And so I still graduated with a 3.6 from Northwestern.
We're going to check that later and make sure it's true.
It could be off by like a decimal or two, but it's true. It was above 3.0, I can remember.
Yeah. So you did speech and debate, and obviously you had that kind of formative experience here with 9/11. What drew you to journalism? Because that's your career path, and what got you there?
Yeah, so because Medill was so competitive, they didn't take transfer students, and I ended up transferring to the School of Speech. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to graduate on time. I could have stayed, you know. And at that time, I wasn't 100% sure still. And also at the time, now you have to remember this is right before the 2008 bubble, like speech communications was actually a pretty viable career.
Sure.
And a lot of people were doing it. And we were coming out of this luxurious time where companies were hiring speech consultants to train people and things like that. And so I really thought that's what I was going to do and go into like a speech related field, because all of a sudden I had found all the success with my speech skills,
right?
Public speaking skills. And then it started to dwindle, right? And I was like, oh. But I was an avid traveler, and I loved traveling, and I was working a little bit. Like, I did this project with the U.S. State Department where I got to go overseas and was talking about what it's like to be an American and all at these universities. But it was then I kind of realized, like, man, there's – no one's really talking about – we get the mainstream media, but no one's really talking about these sort of moments between, like, two conversations between a college student in Egypt versus a graduate in America, and they're talking about what it's like to be, you know.
Sure.
So it got me interested in storytelling in that way. And that really kind of, I worked in a comedy club. It was a public relations internship. I did that. And again, I found myself drawn more to the storytelling components of PR. I also learned how to bartend there, right? And it was, but it was, again, it was like all of these, like if the opportunity presented itself, I just took it.
Yeah.
And I allowed myself to gather all this data about who I was as a person. And I knew it. I'm like, I had this curiosity that's never ending. And I knew I had to become a journalist.
Okay.
So I just went into DePaul's program, you know, and yeah, it was no turning back from there. So I went back. I became a journalist, and I worked in Chicago's media scene, a lot of different places.
Yeah. So you're journalism faculty now here at Harper College. You're an assistant professor of mass communication, and you teach journalism, and you advise the campus newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big question I asked, though. I get, like, what's the future of journalism? Because journalism is... It's pretty shaky right now. I mean, I will say, maybe this is too much inside baseball here, but I will say that when we were making the argument to create your position here at the college, the argument was there is no bigger need right now than for us to have high quality journalists. That was part of the argument that we
still
made.
Have that need.
And so that need is still there, but I think that journalism kind of gets a... It's
well,
bad
people
rap,
have
right
a falling out with
yeah,
it,
yeah.
right? We talk about this in my mass communication class, in my journalism class. I ask my students, why do you not trust the news anymore? And really reflect deeply. What people are not realizing is if we don't advocate and fight for journalists to continue doing what they have to do, even if we think the media is kind of corrupt or right-wing or left-wing or whatever, where are we going to get credible information from?
Right.
Who's going to be the gatekeeper of information, right? So we have to keep advocating for journalism programs. But all journalism programs, everyone I talked to, we just had a conference in November, everyone is seeing this struggle of getting people into that major, of getting people through the doors to become journalists. And I think in part, there's just this falling out with, it's not what it used to be. There's, you know... And there's this heavy reliance on, like, social media. I want to be a content creator. So I think people still want to be journalists, but they're seeing a different pathway, which is, like, I can just be a content creator. And those are two extremes, right? So I know you and I are working with the school about thinking about what's the new degree or something that we have to offer that middle ground. We're adapting.
I think I don't have a problem with the journalism through content creator. It's, the question is, who do you trust, though?
Right.
You know, it's very, I mean, and I think that we as a society in the United States have always, we, you know, we trusted the network news, we trusted the newspaper. And I don't know that we're at a point where we can trust the content creator, right? Because it's like, well, why do I believe this person? You know, I believed Walter Cronkite because he was Walter Cronkite, right? Why do I believe Bethany on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's the problem with not having a news organization behind that, but there's got to be a way to bridge that gap, right? I don't know what it is, but there's got to be. So
there has to be, because it's no mistake that someone like Candace Owens can just throw a theory out and millions of people are buying it and the mainstream media is not talking about it, right? So I do think we have a problem with conglomeration and ownership, and that's also like part of that media literacy that we're talking about, like who owns our media. And like all things institutional, whether that's medicine or journalism or anything, you're going to have these dips in history, right? We look at the history of fake news. Again, we teach this in our classes. Like, it used to be profitable to tell people aliens were invading.
Right.
Because we wanted that entertainment. And I think we're just in that same phase of yellow journalism. It's just a new version of it. We really are. I'd rather you tell me that, you know, there's a big conspiracy about who killed Charlie Kirk or things like that, right? And people want to delve into that more than face the facts of, like, our economy and, you know, and college and whatnot. So there's gonna, I think, and I hope, and I trust, I have to believe that there's going to be a renaissance of, like, people, just like they did after a war was broken out, right? We were tired of the fake news, and it was the people who said, no, we want the truth.
Yeah.
It really did come from the people who rebelled against that lying. And so I think that will happen again. I think there will be a renaissance where people will be like, what has happened to our information? And they're going to demand better, cleaner information again.
Yeah. This used to be a generational gap, too, I think. You know, you have the people who they'll watch cable news all day. Or I just spent a week with my parents, and they're in their 70s.
Yep.
And they'll put on the local news channel that repeats all day long. And so they see the same story, the same tiny little story about a very complicated issue over and over and over and over again, but never dive deeper into what the rest of the story is. So conversations with my dad this weekend about what was really going on with the ICE immigration raids in Chicago. And he was totally shocked about what was, because he didn't hear any of that. He didn't hear about them going into people's houses and ripping them out of their homes and then finding out 2 or 3 days later they weren't the people who they thought they were and that sort of thing, right? Because that's not getting covered in these little things. And so I think there's a big generational gap there as well. And, you know, there's certainly also seem to be more susceptible to believing whatever they see on social media, too.
There are journalists still doing really important things and really good things, and but they're not, they're being overshadowed by the bias, right? And it's the Jerry Springer news era, that's what I call it, like beating each other up. And we are barbarians by nature. If you look at the history of the world, right, we enjoy watching a lion tear up a human being in an arena. That's like our ancestry. So we're just intellectual now. And so we just do it intellectually. We're taking punches and whatever. And so, again, I think there will be a renaissance. I'm hoping that people will come to their senses in my lifetime and realize how we have to reestablish credible news sources. And I think independent journalism will take over again. We'll find ways.
Yeah, I was sitting with some students yesterday. We were talking that, you know, the Onion is no longer funny. It's the truth, and that's the that's part of the problem as well, right? It's just the headline.
Yeah.
So that's all negative stuff. What are you excited about, personally, professionally? What's going on?
I'm excited. I'm writing a book right now about, or I'm starting to write a book. I'm going to be taking a sabbatical next year, hopefully. Well, I have my sabbatical interview tomorrow, so I hope I hope they give it to me. I think they will, though. But it's a writing about an exoneree who served 29 years in prison for wrongful conviction.
Right.
You know, and he just like won a $15 million lawsuit with the city of Chicago. And I am helping him write his memoir. And that's actually one of the things I love about being a teacher in this job, right, is that, like, my days are never the same. No, you know, if you get a tough semester, it'll be over and there's a fresh new start, right? There's new people. No day is ever the same, and I kind of love that. And so I'm excited about delving back into my own journalism skills to really fact check, dig up, look. And a lot of students do come to me. They are creative writers. They want to be creative writers. They love that storytelling component I once fell in love with. And they're like, how do I bridge that? I want to be a journalist, but I really want to be a storyteller. And like, so I think this is giving me the opportunity to really do this, where I get to become a storyteller, help him write this memoir, and also really use hardcore journalism skills.
Yeah.
So
I'm excited for you. That's really cool.
I am. Excited too. It's hard work. It's going to be a long process, but I think I have to model for my students what that looks like, right? No gain without pain.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that what they say, the athletes? I don't know.
Something like that. Yeah. That's really cool, though. That's awesome. I look forward to seeing what you do with that. So we ask everybody who comes on what advice that they might have for Harper College students, either current or future. What do you got?
Oh, how long do I have? Okay. Just kidding. I think everything I just shared, right, like with everybody – is I can't stress enough, like, what an opportunity college is. Mm-hmm. And I get that it's, like, harder than ever to be a student, because I think this generation is dealing with more, like, financial obstacles, more isolation because of social media, and they don't have a lot of healthy friendships and stuff. It's all, like, it's a different, you know. But the human spirit doesn't change. And we come into college, and it's kind of like, I see it with my students every time, right? Like, I just got to pass this class. I just got to get this done. You know, we're checking boxes to get the outcome, which is a certificate or a degree or whatever. And there's no joy in that, right? So reframing our mindset to a growth mindset, like coming into college to actually be like, I want to learn about who I am. What kind of data can I collect on who I am? What am I good at? What do I stink at? And if I stink at something, it's not, I can't do this, right? I see students all the time take what limits them, and it just stops them.
Yeah.
But what limits you can be an opportunity to figure out how to overcome it. So I would really ask students to step in more to growth mindset and realize how lucky they are to be able to be here and explore. This time in your life is yours, like it will never be again, right? So be selfish, like, explore, do things, even if you don't see it aligning with your track. I know advisors today are also like, this is your track. And I that makes me sad. It's like,
yeah, I get why we do it. But at the same time, it's like, no,
yeah,
leave people alone, let them explore.
Effect,
yeah,
right? Yeah. But there is this beautiful component to college, which is self-exploration. And lean into your resiliency, please. Like, I'm worried about students not knowing exactly what triggers them and what limits them, and knowing I can't do this and I can't do that, and instead reframing that to, how can I do this? What is this teaching me about myself? Why do I keep struggling with this, right? For me, it was time management, getting to class on time. But why, how can I be better? And not being afraid to struggle. Like, find the resilience, because while college might give you a degree, right, it's all of the soft skills of collaboration, problem solving, taking feedback and becoming better, and all of those things that are going to determine how successful you are with whatever degree you get.
Yeah, you got to grow as a person.
You have to. Otherwise, you're dead, right? Like, if you stop growing, you might as well.
Well, also, it's the chance to experiment and try stuff. I mean, I tell students all the time, I majored in environmental and hazardous materials management, right? But I was working at the college radio station at the time, and that totally changed my life, right?
Yeah.
That changed my career, my degree, my everything that I wanted to do with my life that I thought I wanted to do changed because I went to work at the college radio station, right?
And I really thought I was going to be like a career journalist and all of these things. And there were a lot of different factors going on. And I was teaching speech classes here because of my history with the speech team. And I had a master's degree, so I could do that. But again, a job popped up.
Yeah.
And that job description, I've saved it. It literally is like someone took my life and wrote a job description, you know? And so I do believe in fate and destiny, those type of things. And my high school teacher told me, you're going to be a teacher. I'm telling you right now, you're going to end up being a teacher one day.
Cool.
And I was like, well, I was ticked. I'm like, no, I don't want to be a teacher. Yeah. I want to be a, you know, correspondent. But as I watched people in during COVID and stuff, like, all these journalists lose their jobs, and I was still getting to work in like a journalism environment and all of those things, I was so grateful. And yeah, most mornings, I absolutely love what I do. Most mornings. So I do think I'm grateful for like working out
most
that
mornings.
Most mornings, yeah.
No, we all have that. Yeah.
It's usually the snowy ones like today where I'm like, you know. Most morning and around finals time is not my favorite, you know.
I know I'm doing a lot of grading right now at finals time. Yeah. And I'm not thrilled.
So, yeah. I don't know if you know this, but, you know, finals time in college is like the leading cause for grandparent deaths.
Oh, yeah. Well, not with AI now, though. No grandmother has died since ChatGPT released to the public. Have you had a grandmother died since ChatGPT was released to the public? I haven't.
You're thinking about it now, aren't you? I've still had... Yeah, maybe less grandparents dying.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I haven't had a single one in 18 months. Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. Yeah. What a great look at the lives saved.
Look at the lives saved. AI is saving lives. There we go.
We're being mean. Oh well. Anyway, okay. Thanks for so much for coming and doing this. And we tried to do it last year and it didn't work out. And I'm so glad that we were able to do it this time. And you know, I'll just knock on your wall next door. And we'll feel so lucky.
And I'm really thankful for being here. And this is like full circle story for me. So I'm really grateful I could share it.
It's really cool. You know, you are one of there are several, and this is kind of a common thing. Another institution I taught at as well. Students who graduated from the community college, went on, had a career, and came back and taught there. There are several here at the college at Harper and at other institutions as well. And I always think that's kind of fun. It's a neat thing to see people like want to come back and
because I believe in the magic of this place. It worked for me. So I really want to be able to do that for our students.
Yeah, that's awesome. Maham Khan is a Harper College graduate and a Harper Assistant Professor of Mass Communication. If you're enjoying Harper Talks, please subscribe. And while you're at it, rate and review us so that others might find us. Harper Talks is a co-production of Harper College Alumni Relations and Harper Radio. Our show is produced by Shannon Hines. This episode was edited by Kobe Pozo. Our entire online content producer is Lee Bailey. And our theme music was created by Aiden Cashman. I'm Brian Shelton. Thanks for listening, or in this case, watching.